This is Ask a Biologist, a program about the living world, and I'm Dr. Biology. We began our last program with a mystery animal quiz that turned out to be both fun and popular. For this show, we have a similar quiz. But in this case, we're going to play the sound of one of the animals that our guest scientist spends his time researching, and as you will learn in this program, he also records and collects the sounds they make. So let's listen to the mystery animal. Now, what animal could this be? To help out, let me give you four choices. The first, a pig. The second, a bird. The third, a frog. And for the fourth, none of the above. You came up with some completely different animal. Are you ready? The answer is a bird. Yes, this is a recording of a bird called a neotropic cormorant. And my guest today is Professor Pierre Deviche, who is a faculty member in the School of Life Sciences at Arizona State University. Welcome to our show, Professor Deviche.
Hello.
For our listeners, let me just tell them a little bit about you. Your area of research is avian endocrinology, and you are what we call an avian endocrinologist, or in simpler terms, a scientist interested in hormones. Now, for those of you that don't know what a hormone is, these are little chemical messengers that travel through our bodies, and they are able to turn some things on and some things off. In the case of birds, Pierre Deviche, he's looking into how they control bird behavior during the time of year when they mate and reproduce. Is that pretty close?
Yeah, no, that's a pretty good description of kind of research that I do.
But for this show, we're going to talk about another passion that involves recording and collecting bird songs and calls. We will also talk about a great place on the web where visitors can listen to your recordings. To start us off, I've heard that birds have dialects. In much the same way people speak with a southern drawl or a Brooklyn accent. Is this true?
Yeah, this is quite correct. And that is to say you can actually know something about where a bird is coming from, sometimes by just listening to its song. So different populations of the same species have different what we call dialects depending on where they are coming from.
So if birds have dialects, then for bird watching enthusiasts, wouldn't it be better to get recordings from the area they're doing their bird watching?
Yeah, generally speaking, this is what you should be doing if you live in a specific area and you really want to know about the birds that live in that area. You should probably focus on the birds around you, because a bird of the same species that lives 2,000 or 3,000 miles away might have a song which is distinctly different.
Some of the CDs, I went through the bookstore, and I've also been looking on the website since we started actually working with bird songs with you. I noticed that they only have one recording. They don't often have more than one recording of the same species. So how important is it to be able to listen to several recordings of a bird song and or their calls?
Well, I think that really depends on the kind of work that you are doing. That is to say, if you, for example, listen to a robin, well, a robin from the East Coast or from the West Coast is still a robin, and if you know that song, you'll be able to say that very easily. However, if you're interested in like more subtle aspects of the song, then this kind of making the difference between the dialects is something that actually can tell us a lot and is a lot of fun as well.
Well, you know, we're talking about dialects here. I also found it interesting because of our interactions with the bird aviary that it turns out that birds don't all sing the same song. And is this true? I mean, you know, if I'm in my backyard today and I listen to a particular bird, will I hear exactly the same song from that species of bird all the time?
There's a lot of variation here. Sometimes you have some species in which, for example, a male sings one song and that's essentially all it does. And you see that, for example, if you go to a pet store and you buy, a zebra finch, which is a very common pet bird. Well, an adult zebra finch essentially has one song, so each male has its own song, and this is the only song that bird ever produces. But many birds don't do that, and each individual have multiple songs. So there's a lot of variation there. And you can see that, for example, if you live in an area which has, let's say, mockingbirds, which is a very widespread bird, and you can listen to a mockingbird for hours and you still pick up new what we call syllables. So these birds have, I'm not going to say an infinite, but a very large number of different syllables within their song. So the song in a bird like that is extremely complex, very difficult.
I've actually heard that myself. And strangely enough, mockingbirds, I hear them often at night singing out my backyard.
Yes.
And it's kind of curious because, yes, they seem to have an awful lot of songs or calls.
Yeah, and what happens in a bird, like in a mockingbird, is they are very good at learning new songs. So they will start picking up sounds like cell phones or cars honking and all kind of sounds like that you don't normally associate with a bird necessarily. But these birds, especially, are really good at learning that kind of thing and then essentially making that part of their own song. So that, I mean, but of course, not all birds are like that at all.
Well, it's a good thing because this one I have out my back door seems to keep me up at night, especially in the summertime. We have in the studio with us two song sparrows, actually two of your recordings of song sparrows. And I thought it would be nice to do a comparison because this gives an example of a more typical bird. But you can see from the two recordings that they sound quite a bit different. Not totally different, but quite a bit. And why it would be important to have more than one recording if you're going to learn the songs and the calls of a particular bird. So let's go ahead and play the first recording. So that's the first one. So that's the recording of the song sparrow. And now here's a second one. So you can tell, I think, even from that quick lesson, if you're a listener, that even though they're both song sparrows, there's quite a bit of difference in that.
Yes. I think this is very easy to pick up.
And it's also one of the things that when we started talking about doing a bird aviary as a novice, not being a bird enthusiast, I thought, well, you can put one song up and you're done. And I still remember to this day, your comment was, oh, no, we must have more than one. You know, along with these songs, we, as children and, well, humans, we think about the fact that we learn to speak. It's not something you're born with. Is this something similar to birds? Do birds learn how to sing?
Yeah, this is something that, this is a topic that there's a tremendous amount of research that has been done on this topic, and it turns out that it really depends on the species that you are talking of here. And some bird species, essentially, the song is what we call innate. That is to say the bird is essentially born with that ability to produce song, and as an adult, it doesn't really have to learn anything. This is just the way it does it, just like we maybe learn to walk or something like that. Okay, we pretty much do that all the same way. But then it turns out that many other birds actually do have to learn their song. And the way that scientists have shown that is by raising some of these birds in complete isolation without the presence of parents, or without these birds, when they were young, ever hearing other birds of the same species. And if you do that, what you find is that what these birds do is they still can produce some kind of vocalizations, but they can never produce the song which is well sort of articulated and what you really associated with a species. So there's a definite learned component.
Now, if they're taken out of isolation, just to clarify this, are they able to then learn the song, or if they don't learn it at a young age, they never actually?
Yeah, right. And what you see is not the second possibility. That is to say, what you observe when you do that kind of study is that birds have what we call, technically we call that an open window. That is to say, they are able to learn the song of their own species when they are at a certain age. And past that age, it becomes much more difficult and oftentimes impossible for them to learn it. And so this is a very sort of interesting topic. And in a way, this is very much the same that we see in humans. That is to say, you know, humans, when we study a second language, and I can take my own example because English is a second language for me, and I know that I will never speak English like a native English speaker. And that's because when I learned English, I was at school and I was old enough that, you know, my brain is just working in a way that I can try as hard as I can. But I know that for the rest of my life, each time I go to the store, the first question someone is going to ask me is, where are you coming from?
Right.
If I say Texas, they don't believe me somehow. So, this is very much the same phenomenon.
So your brain gets wired at that early stage and afterward more difficult to work through that.
That's right.
Well, that actually is a curious thing. So learning bird calls at a young age, some of them need it, some of them don't. Do all birds sing and have calls?
No, absolutely not. You again have a tremendous amount of variation there. No, the birds that have all the complex songs that we typically associate with singing in birds are part of a specific family, and we call these ossines. Okay, so this is like the mockingbird and the thrushes and the robins and all these things, okay? But then you have many birds that produce relatively simple songs, and then you have many birds that never sing at all, okay? If I take like a duck or a turkey vulture or a chicken, well, they can sometimes produce sounds, but these are not songs.
So some of the birds can sing, some of them can't. Some of them just don't have the type of mechanisms or physiological mechanisms to be able to sing. Do both males and females sing, or is it mainly the male that does all the singing?
Yeah, again, you have a tremendous amount of variation there depending on the species. In many species, I mean, most of the species that we think of around us, usually only the male sings, if it sings at all, okay? And sometimes, you know, the female can produce a little bit of what we probably would not even call a song because it's very simple and not as loud. And so, I mean, basically the females do not sing, okay? But I'm saying that there's a lot of variation here because if you go, for example, to the tropics, there you find many species in which the male and the female actually have songs that are just about as complex and very elaborate, and when you hear one of these birds sing, you would be totally unable to decide, is this a male or a female, based on the song. Up here in the United States, we don't really have many species like that, but we've got a few. For example, cardinals. This is a species where the female oftentimes can sing as well as the male, from our point of view. So the song is as complex.
So this is the Arizona cardinal?
Yeah, there's only one species of cardinal in the Arizona cardinal is especially red, as we all know. But
I'm teasing since our football team here is the Arizona cardinal. Since your research does not involve recording and collecting bird songs, as an avian endocrinologist, you're not really focused on that. What got you started with recording birds?
Well, first of all, this is a fun thing to do, okay? This is something that, you know, even if you are not paid to do it, this is one of these things that I find really not enjoyable. And I think a different reason is that you can actually learn a lot from doing that because you get back home, you listen to the recordings, and that oftentimes actually really helps you memorize them. So next time you go out in the field, it becomes much easier to identify that bird based on the sound, okay, because you heard it 200 times at home, okay, before you went out in the field. So there's a really practical aspect to that. And the other thing is, I think that recording songs and then analyzing them with a computer really gives you, I think it really gives you a view like in, no, a different world. I mean, you really discover like how complex these vocalizations are and how fine-tuned and everything is so amazingly complex. It's a really amazing thing.
I would agree from listening to the songs that are on our website. We're going to talk a little bit more about that. In the meantime, though, since you got hooked on this, I bet you we have some young scientists out there that might like to go do a similar thing. Is there special equipment needed, or can you suggest a simple set of equipment that anyone can start with?
Well, I mean, there are two basic pieces of equipment you need, okay? You need a microphone and you need a recorder. Basically, the quality of your recordings is going to be much more dependent on your microphone than on your recorder, okay? Price-wise, these things vary enormously. If you go high-end to like the really professional kind of equipment, you are talking of easily several $1,000s. But you can really do, at least initially, you can do with much less money than that. And probably for a few $100s, you can get like an MP3 recorder and a decent little mic, and that will really get you going.
Is there a particular kind of mic that you could even suggest?
So yeah, most people who go out and do bird recordings use what we call a shotgun, a microphone. And what we mean by that, these are very directional microphones. So they really target what is just in front of the microphone, a relatively small angle. And this is something that in many cases you probably want, because what that does is eliminate a lot of the noise which is sort of outside what you are really interested in recording. So the more directional your microphone, the cleaner, if you like, your recording should be.
Very good. If they end up having more questions at the end of the show, we actually have a place for them to send their questions if someone really wants to try this. I also want to put a plug in for the bird aviary at the Ask a Biologist website. I spoke about it a little bit at the beginning of the show. This is a place on the web that people can visit and hear recordings from over 220 species of birds, many of them that are multiples of each bird, that live in the southwest United States. These are your recordings, and I have to say, after working with them for several years, I've become more of a connoisseur, and I definitely think they're worth the visit. It also includes a lot of basic information about birds, including sonograms of the bird recordings, and in many cases, more than one recording of each species, as I said. Is this a project you would have ever imagined that you would have been working on?
Oh, absolutely not. No, I mean, when I started with this, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, it was really to have fun out there, you know, in nature, and to learn about the birds that surround us. It's something which I always find very enjoyable. But I think when you can develop that into some kind of program that becomes publicly useful and enjoyable, I think that really adds a huge dimension to the whole thing. And yeah, no, I did not think the project was going to go this way 5 years ago. Absolutely not.
I noticed also on the website, and I say noticed, it's kind of a third-person type of thing, I realized that we put on there, besides the recordings, we put on the pictures of the birds and descriptions. We also do something a little bit more unique, and we put what are called sonograms of the recordings. These are visual representations of what the songs or the sounds look like. And even though you may be used to looking at a sound file on your computer where you see as the time goes by it either gets fatter or thinner on the line, and that means either louder or quieter, sonograms are different from that because they have this color associated with them. And what I'd like you to do is if you could just give us a quick rundown of the difference between just looking at that time and volume versus what's going on in a sonogram.
Right. So, yeah, sonogram, as you mentioned, this is really a visual representation of the song. So this is a representation of the song as a function of time. And a sonogram is going to give you information about the volume, how loud the sound is, but also about the pitch, which is the frequency. Is it a high pitch or a low pitch sound?
Something really bassy versus something
that's
really
right.
High.
That's okay. Right. And where this becomes critical when you study a bird song is that there are many subtleties in a song that you cannot pick up just by listening to it. You have to visualize it, and sometimes that really informs you about fine features of the song that when you just go out there and listen to it, you could not even guess that exists. And I think it's also very visually appealing in many cases. And I think that people who are listening to us right now, actually, if they go into the website and check some of these songs, will, I think, have a very clear idea of what I'm talking about. It's very visually appealing.
Well, actually, when we were talking, not only are they appealing, I think you mentioned that some people can actually look at the sonograms and reproduce the song or whistle it, so to speak.
Yeah, this is a very crude approximation, of course, because we don't have the complexity that birds have in terms of being able to produce the kind of vocalization that they produce. So, but you are right. If you know how to read sonogram, you can whistle it or try to sing like a bird. You never get even close because it's much more complex and different than the way we produce sounds.
You did a beautiful job of leading me into a question that I've been wanting to ask. How are they different than humans that they can make these songs that are so much more elaborate?
Yeah, so the way that birds produce songs is completely different than the way we produce sounds. And that is to say, the way that we humans produce sounds is by using what we call our larynx, which is our sound box. Well, birds don't have that sound box. Instead, they have what we call a syrinx, and you spell that S-Y-R-E-R-I-N-X, syrinx, and it is located anatomically not at the same place as the human sound box, and it also works quite differently. And so the way that the sounds are generated by a bird are completely different than the way they are generated in a human. The sound box, or the equivalent of the sound box, is just built on a different principle. And so we can try to imitate the sound that a bird sings, but we can never do the same. We just don't have the mechanical ability to do that.
Right, we just don't have the right parts.
We don't have the right parts.
And before computers came about, what was another thing that I learned as we were working on the aviary, the movies used samples from birds for a lot of their science fiction movies because mm-hmm. they're so quite literally out of this world sounding. One of them, I want the listeners actually to go to our website, pull up the brown-headed cowbird. It sounds perfect out of some kind of electronic instrument in the far, far future to me. So here we are. We've got our avian endocrinologist who has a passion for recording birds. What's it like to go out and search for new birds to record? Is this something that's just you can step out your back door, or is it a little more involved?
Well, it really depends what you are trying to do. In a way, yeah, you can just step in your backyard and record birds, and you will learn a lot from just doing that. But of course, after a while, you will probably want to venture a little bit further away and try to record different kinds of birds, more variety, things that you have not heard or never encountered in the past. And so then it becomes a little bit more involved in terms of time and distances. You probably will have to drive to new places. You're going to look for specific birds that are not seen where you live and things like that. So in a way, this is a lot of fun as well because it really takes you to new places and you discover all kind of new areas that you did not even know they exist until then. So there's a lot of fun, and it is time consuming. There's no question about that.
Early mornings?
Many times early mornings, yes. Most birds are most active singing early morning, around dawn, and sometimes a bit at dusk as well. But many birds are definitely most active in the early morning. And of course, they also sing most in the spring and summer, which is when the sun rises very early. So that means to hear these birds sing, and actually many species start singing well before sunrise, when it's just barely getting light. And to get recordings of these birds, of course, you will have to be there at the right time as well.
Hmm. Well, I think some of our younger listeners may not be willing to get up too early, but let's go back to your backyard here. We have another set of recordings, and what we're going to do is we're going to start off with one bird, and we're going to keep adding until we finish up with five birds, because quite frankly, you don't get to hear birds usually all by themselves, so nicely isolated, and you work very hard at that. So let's just let this one go, and let's listen to how complex the backyard can become. Thank you. as you can tell, it becomes quite complex and quite busy in the backyard. I'd like to switch to some of the questions I like to ask every one of my scientists and biologists. When did you first know you wanted to be a scientist?
Well, this is a really difficult question because I don't think you get up one day, at least this is not the case. I think it happens for most people. You just don't get up one day out of your bed and decide, well, I'm going to be a scientist. I think in my case, I was definitely raised in the countryside, very small place. And so my whole life I was in contact with animals, not only birds, but all kind of wildlife around me and around where I was living. And eventually you start asking questions about what these animals are doing out there and how they do it. And so I think, certainly in my case, that was like a gradual sort of development and getting more and more interested in that kind of question.
That's really curious because even though this is a young program, this is our fourth episode that we've created, it's interesting because the three other people before you all had similar things to say. And the most common thing was an interest in animals in general, a general love of animals. We're going to see if this continues over the year, if that's a theme. So if you weren't a biologist, what would you be?
Well, that is a difficult question as well. I've thought of that sometimes, and I think I probably would like to be a geologist or paleontologist, maybe.
Paleontologist?
Like yes.
Mm-hmm. And so if you have some young scientists listening out there, what advice do you have for them?
Oh, I think the advice I have is to simply look around you. And I think you have to keep in mind that you don't have to go very far to discover how wonderful and how complex nature is. If you have a small backyard and you just go out there on a summer day and you find insects, butterflies, ants, little things like that, and you start observing them, and of course birds as well, you start discovering that these birds, these animals are doing amazingly complex and interesting things. And the more you know about them, the more you want to know about them. And this is, I think, the key, is to always keep an eye open on, and an ear open as well, on everything which is going on around you. I think this is critical.
Very good. And I have one more question. What is your favorite bird song?
Probably I would say that some of my favorite bird songs are Among the Thrushes that we have here in North America. So I think some of these birds are producing the most amazing songs, not necessarily the most complex songs, but in terms of the way we perceive them, these are absolutely fascinating sounds to hear and to listen to, and these birds just always amaze me when I hear them.
Well, that's what we want our listeners to do, is go to the website, not only to listen to the brown-headed cowbird, to see what that sounds like, but also to listen to the thrushes.
Mm-hmm.
Pierre Deviche, thank you for visiting with us.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Ask a Biologist, and my guest has been Professor Pierre Deviche from the ASU School of Life Sciences. The Ask a Biologist podcast is produced on the campus of Arizona State University, and even though our program is not broadcast live, you can still send us your questions about biology using our companion website. The address is askabiologist.asu.edu. Or you can just Google the words Ask a Biologist. I'm Dr. Biology.